Whatever you want. Like, we can do it again. I'll do it again. Because you like the elephants thing, right?
I do like the elephants thing, although I wasn't rolling on the elephants thing, actually. Because I was editing something as I was trying to do that.
Elephants Gerald?
Oh. Is that an old joke, or did you just make that up?
I don't know. I just thought of it just now. Boy, I'm you know, I'm a little choked up.
You're choked up, really?
I'm a little choked up.
Okay.
It's weird. I mean, it's double digits gone. The last one, well, 99.
Wait, hold on a second. We have a whole hour and a half to do before that's actually true. Like, we're okay. Just at the beginning of 99.
Can you play, what's that? Is that Toto? That 99? Woo!
That is Toto, actually.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I like Toto.
I like Toto, too.
Yeah, that ages us. that places us right there.
Well, it could have been worse. We could have started singing Ambrosia.
Ooh. Really? Don't get me started.
All right. It's episode 99 of On Taking Pictures. Thank you for coming along with us for the last of the episodes before we hit 100.
100 episodes.
That's pretty cool. Hey, we should get a cake.
We've got a little surprise for people next week, don't we?
A couple. Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. So okay. don't miss out next week. So it is On Taking Pictures. It's Tuesday. It is episode 99. We've been here for 98 episodes, 98 weeks. Man, wow. That sounds like, isn't that weird?
It's a long time.
It's so cool. Yeah. It's so cool that you guys have hung out with us for that long, and we're going to keep going. As long as you keep listening, we will keep talking. So, my name is Jeffrey Sidoris from fadedandblurred.com, and with me, the effervescent Bill Ooh, Wadman.
That's a nice one. I like that one.
Yeah. Hey, I can't help but notice that since we spoke on Twitter, you've been a little more prolific in recent days than you have in the past.
Oh, in the blog writing?
Coincidence? I think not.
Actually, both of those were in the works before our conversation. You know, I used to write a lot more on my blog.
You
know what?
You just can't give me any credit, can you? You can't.
Okay, here we go. Jeffrey, it was all you.
There it is.
You were the reason why I do anything in life.
Am I the wind beneath your wings?
Yeah. Actually, can we take a break so I can use the bathroom? That's for you too. What? You know, yeah, I wrote a post that I had started like weeks ago about large format photography for people who have never done it and don't know how it works.
Right.
And then one with some things about Lightroom that I've realized over the years of using Lightroom.
Yep.
That are little tips. But yeah, it's true. I put them
out
there.
That's good. You've been a little more active. You've been you participated in the assignment this week, which was cool.
I did yes. I it was funny. I was just riding home on the train yesterday and there was this girl sitting there in this very odd manner underneath a picture of cats on the wall.
Yeah, as if she's looking at the cat and the one cat is then looking up at something else. So it's kind of funny.
How do you feel about that, though? If I had my phone down by my knees and sort of tilted it up and looked away and clicked.
I don't mind it. Oh, and then I didn't even notice this. There's the guy on the wall in the subway, like pointing at her.
Yeah.
Like you.
Yeah. It's all very Caravaggio.
Like the Pink Floyd guy.
Like the Pink Floyd guy?
You know? Okay. You can't have any pudding if you don't eat your meat.
You're in rare form this morning.
So it's been good. It's good. And yeah. a new header on your website.
Yeah, a new little header I was playing with. Yeah, I'm all over the place. It's crazy.
It's it's a little different for you.
Yeah, and I'm not sold on it. It was just, it's more of trying something different out. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
You approve so far?
I like the new activity, I must say, yes.
All right. I'll good. Keep doing it just for you.
Thank you. So a lot of great stuff. I mean, I don't know. This is Windows and Doors, this last assignment. You guys put up some really, really good work.
Yeah.
And we're thrilled that these assignments are going well. And if only there was a place we could see them all. Hmm. Anyway, you like that?
That's good. Ah, that.
Foreshadowing.
What do you think about my assignment for next week? Is this a good one?
Bill, you got a good one here. You got a good one.
I'm trying, Jeffrey.
Next week, I like this one.
Close up.
Now, could this? You could take this in a couple. You could say close up like macro.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Or it could just be a subject filling the frame, not necessarily macro. Could be. Go a lot of different ways for this.
Yeah, which is why I thought it was something different.
Yeah, I like this.
Okay.
Keep them coming. You guys are putting up some really, really great work. And even beyond the assignments, just sharing photos or crit wall or, you know, you're a lot of you are doing 365 or daily projects that are looking really good. Some really, really nice work.
It's impressive.
Yes, good stuff. We'll have to do another hangout soon.
We just have to do them not on a Friday night at 10 o'clock. Because that's a difficult time for me to be in front of a computer. You know.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah, we'll do other days and time. That's awesome. So, like, I'm going to be in Portland next weekend. So, right. When I get back, we'll think of something.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, great stuff, though. Hey, so, go ahead. What do you got?
So, this last week, I went and saw two performances of the Paul Taylor Dance Company at Lincoln Center.
Right.
And, of course, one of our friends of the show, Francisco Graciano, is one of the dancers for Paul Taylor.
Right.
So because I'm friends with a lot of those guys, yeah. I'll believe it when I see it. And I'll tell you, though, going to see other art that has nothing to do with visual stuff, you know, still visual stuff or cameras or any of that kind of stuff. I find it much more reinvigorating than me going and seeing photography creatively.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not the first. There are a lot of that's kind of the thing, right?
Yeah.
Is go see art, go see sculpture, go see dance, go see opera, go listen to music. Yeah. Let one art form inform and inspire another.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, pieces that they were showing. I mean, there's this one called Sunset that I love that has all this Elgar music for strings.
Okay.
Which is just gorgeous, gorgeous stuff underneath. So not only is there the dance, but the music is really good. They have this one, Polonic piece for harpsichord and orchestra on another one of the pieces that I was like, man, I had to come home and find recordings of it on Spotify because it was so good. Because I was like, I got to listen to that music again. So
is all the music being played live there as well?
No, not for this show. They do at times have live musicians, but a lot of this stuff is... They do weird things to a lot of their music where it's sort of they'll intercut two pieces or stop things and it'll turn into just percussion for a while and then come back and stuff you really couldn't do or very difficult to reproduce live, you know. But just really great seeing people perform live. That's the other thing, man. Getting up on stage in front of a couple thousand people and doing something they're there for 3 weeks every night plus two shows on Saturday.
Wow.
You know, that's exhausting. Like, I don't know how they do it. That's a marathon.
Yes.
Anyway,
yes.
Just wanted to put that out there that if you're in the New York City area, you should go see them. They're there until like the 30th, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really, really good stuff. I also went to see that Kappa show that you had been talking about.
Uh-huh. So, very excited that you saw that. The book is fantastic.
Go ahead. The book is fantastic. A lot of the pictures are fantastic. The prints are beautiful. It's funny because a lot of the pictures are not the kinds of pictures you would ever think Kappa would be taking. Or rather, not the stuff that is typically put in any sort of 25-picture retrospective of Kappa's work.
Right. They are more akin to...
Vanity Fair articles than they are
Life magazine. Or you know, like lighter pictures they're more sort of lifestyle.
I'm going to go to this ski slope and get this. Yeah. And so that was really interesting. And they had all kinds of letters that he wrote too.
Well, that's the thing. He wanted to be a writer before he became a photographer.
Yeah. And but there's letters to like his editor saying, you know, you should use this picture and try to sell this to them, but you know, don't do it for less than this amount of money. And it was, it's fascinating the way it worked back then. Also interesting there, they had a little case with a few negatives and a little write up about how they did the show. And apparently like 80% of his stuff was Kodachrome, and those have held up really, really well. You know, they look pretty much the same. But that's the classic Kodachrome thing, right? That these negatives don't decay much.
Right.
But then there were some that were, I forget what he was using, like say they were Ektachrome or something. I forget what the exact one was, where the blues had almost entirely been lost. And you can actually see that. And like the link that you put in the show notes with the picture of... You put in the link to your show. I was looking at the Kappa and color on the show, right. The exhibits. I'll put it in here. There's this picture of Bogart and what's his name in these gray suits, but you can see that the sky is just sort of lost its color. Like it almost looks desaturated. And that's not because the original picture would have been desaturated. It's just that the film has decayed to the point where when they scanned it and color corrected it, some of the color was just missing. You know,
yes.
So that's not an artistic decision. Yeah, it was fascinating.
Yeah, they talk about how the restoration process, they did have to sort of use their best guess of what it would look like because they had no original reference of the color because it had been lost.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that, to me, that kind of stuff is almost as fascinating as looking at the pictures. You know, knowing how they went about the process. I thought some of the pictures were amazing. I was surprised though also that. There was stuff all the way up to 4x5. So you shoot 4x5s and medium format and 35mm, where you tend to think of Kappa as a very small camera kind of guy.
Right.
Apparently he was shooting with big cameras at the time, you know, probably speed graphics or something.
The curator, Cynthia Young, she talked about it, and again in the book, saying that at any given time he had two or three cameras around his neck in not only different film stocks, black and white and color, but different film formats.
Yeah.
And would shoot the same thing simultaneously in all three different, you know, different ways. It's a fascinating book. And it's big. It's almost tabloid size.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's
neat. How much do they charge for that? A lot of money?
I think it was $40, $45.
Okay. Well, I'll put let me see if I can put a link in a link to the Amazon page in the show notes.
Yeah, it's anyway, a really good book.
Really good show. If you're in New York, go check it out. It's not the kind of thing that I would go back to a second time. You know what I mean? But it was fun. It's always fun seeing original prints, you know, or not original prints, just prints in person, like, you know.
Well, and especially, as you said at the beginning, it's work that you wouldn't normally associate with Kappa.
Yeah.
You know, you normally associate Kappa with this, you know, sort of grainy, you know, motion blur, out of focus combat photojournalism.
Yep.
And this is very, very different from that. And it's almost, you know, as if it was shot by a different person.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting, you know, sort of testament to what an accomplished photographer and writer that he was.
Yeah. It's very, very cool stuff. So go check that out. So downstairs, they had this other thing going on, this other show called What is a Photograph? And there was some trippy stuff down there.
Yeah, I'm tempted. I'm on the fence still about ordering the book because I think it looks really interesting to me.
I wouldn't order the book.
Not so much?
No. There's a lot of stuff in there that I just kind of rolled my eyes at, but I roll my eyes at a lot of things, so I don't know if that's just me.
Right.
For example, there was one guy who was taking pictures of the Southwest Desert, right?
Okay.
And instead of taking pictures of the Southwest Desert, he picked up sand, dyed the sand, and then sprinkled it onto photo paper in a dark room. And that's the photograph, is sand on photo paper.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
made sandpaper essentially with the sand from the thing. So it's like, okay, I guess that is, you might argue that is art, but is that a photograph? Because it wasn't really made using light at all. That was just basically you created sandpaper. And that's a photograph. So there's things like that I'm like, okay, maybe if we were all really high late at night and discussing this might be interesting. But it was a little too much for me.
I don't know. I, from what I read about it, and again, I haven't seen it. Yeah. The Gerhard Richter stuff sounded really interesting to me.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. They're more interesting concepts than actual interesting, photo work. Does that make sense? You know, even like the stuff I put up the other night of those, spinny things, I call them spirals.
Right.
So those were a takeoff of one of the things I saw in that show. And it was just like this crazy tube that looked sort of like mine, but less colory. And I heard one of the curators talking to a bunch of kids, and she said, you know, does anybody know how this was made? And of course, no one knew how it was made. And it turned out he just put a piece of photo paper on the ground and tied a flashlight to a string and let it spiral down in a circle.
Okay.
And that's what it is. So I came home and took a lamp off the ceiling and hung it over and spun it above my camera with a wide angle lens. And that's how those things are made.
Right, right, right.
So it's like a neat thing, but it's like, okay, yeah, that's kind of neat. But
so do you not consider your own experiments photographs?
No. Is that kind of where you're at? That one I would say is a photograph because it was made by light. But then some of them just felt like, does this really deserve to be up on a wall at a really prestigious place? Or sometimes I look at that stuff and I wonder, is it that it's actually good, or is it that people are not bored of seeing, but the curators are bored of making things of more traditional photography, so they're grasping at trying to find something that you could also call photography in order to make a different exhibit? You know,
maybe, or maybe it's to inspire a discussion like this one.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm just saying that I wouldn't spend $50 on the book. It was fun going downstairs and seeing it, just like walking through and reading the labels. But there was some pretty trippy stuff down there. My things, are they art? Yeah, they're fun. You know, just me messing around. You know, Conrad was at yet another Paul Taylor show. She saw three last week. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. So go check that out if you're at the Kappa and Color. Go downstairs. By the way, ICP is losing its lease in January of next year.
And do they know where they're going yet?
It's just for the museum, apparently. And no, I don't think they haven't announced where they're going yet. Hmm. So it'll be interesting.
Yes.
To see where it goes. But always.
How long have they been there?
Since the 80s, early 80s, I think. Apparently, the people who own the building basically give them nearly free rent, from what I read.
Ah.
Like, they were totally sort of, you know, they wanted them there, and it was some rich people with rich whatever, so they, you know.
And now they're like, wait, we can get how much?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wait, what now?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Anyway, go check it out. I'll put some links in the show notes. What is a photograph? All right, what's next?
What is a photograph?
It's a good question. I'll put a link to that one too. What's next?
What's next? There was something on the group, and I'm looking for it right now. I think it was Millie that started this thread.
Oh, boy.
Maybe?
Oh, Millie? Boy.
I think it might have been Millie. Anyway, the discussion was around... It kind of piggybacked on what we talked about last week in terms of making a living as an artist. And you said something that I thought was very interesting that, and I'm paraphrasing, so I'm sorry if it's not exactly correct, but something to the effect that you should be able to make a living doing what you love. That if you can't make a living making photographs, then there's something wrong with the world. And you were kind of emphatic about it.
That is a slightly myopic view of what I was saying. But all I was saying is that if society gets to the point where that creativity there, that no artists can make a living doing what they're doing, that's a sad state of affairs. Yes.
Okay. But society only reached the point where you could make a living being creative in the last 50, 75, maybe 100 years.
True.
And society was pretty successful in a lot of areas up until then. And I think it's odd to me that there's, go ahead.
Okay. But at the same time, the people who, there were artists who were making a living before that, but they were largely paid for by the church. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
And there were very few.
Yeah.
You know, well, Van Gogh never sold anything.
Sure. Yes. But
Pollock made what? $4,800 was the most he ever made during his lifetime.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, who are you? Who are any of us?
Yeah.
To feel like we are owed a living for our creative endeavors.
Oh, I don't think I'm owed. I certainly don't think I'm owed. I'm entitled to being able to make a living doing what I'm saying. I'm saying that I think that as society progresses forward and we have more and more stuff being automated by machines and whatever it is, shouldn't it be about the happiness of citizens? Shouldn't that be the goal?
No.
That people live interesting lives?
You're guaranteed the pursuit of happiness
I'm not saying I'm guaranteed anything. I'm just saying that shouldn't society be going in a direction that people have more choice and more freedom to do what they want with their lives?
No.
Okay, well then that's where we differ.
I think that's a great pipe dream, but I don't think it's the reality.
I think that in the last 50 to 75 years, yes, there have been professional artists in a way that there weren't before. I thought that that was progress. And I feel like if we get to the point where it's no longer an option, then that's de-evolution.
But why should that be the goal? Either you do it because you love it, or you do it because you want to make a living doing it. And I think there's room for both of those views.
Of course there is. Yeah.
I think it has sometimes been alluded to that if you're in the realm of photography, if you're doing it as a hobby, you're somehow not as important as those who are doing it for a living.
Oh, and I absolutely do not think that that's the case. I think there's plenty of people who do it. I don't think that the line between the amateur and the professional, I mean, if the professional is defined as somebody who makes money doing what they're doing, that doesn't mean that they're good, you know? That doesn't mean that they're any better than the amateur.
As we will see in our Photographer of the Week.
Yeah, right. You know, so I think that those are mutually exclusive things. But it also means that somebody who isn't making a lot of money doing it isn't necessarily bad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that plays in both directions. I just think that my utopia involves people spending their lives doing things that they enjoy.
Yeah, but who pays for that? Well, somebody's got to pay for it. And the amount of money that's available to finance those endeavors is limited. And the people that have that money, are they willing to pay for the lifestyles of those who just want to pursue their dreams? Or to pursue their passion, or to pursue their art, and should they be expected to pay for it?
Well, I mean, okay, this becomes a much larger discussion, of which it might be a little too much for our little tiny podcast, right? But there's a socioeconomic argument to be made that, you know, the rich keep getting richer and the poor keep getting poorer and all that kind of stuff, right? So it gets to the point where only people who own stuff, own factories and own real estate, and, you know, the prices keep going up and up and up, so no one can actually buy into that class. And that class, like, that's no good, you know, either. So I'm supposed to work at a job that I hate just so I can afford to take pictures on the weekends? Like, that, I just, yeah, that might be true of a lot of people. That just makes me sad, is my point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I feel like that's not what life should be about. We're not born so that we can, like, you know, slave away 40 hours a week so we can get 2 weeks a year of vacation on a beach somewhere just to revive enough to go back to keep doing it. Like, that's just sad to me. And I feel like that's, if society is moving in more in that direction than more and more people can actually do what they love and make enough money to live, then yeah, that's sad to me. I don't think that they are entitled to it.
But it is moving in that direction. The gap between the haves and the have-nots is growing.
Yeah, it keeps getting worse. Right. And anything that I see that it keeps going that direction makes me sad. And I wish that we could find a way to reverse it. Because I don't think that that makes anything better. There's nothing you can do with $5 billion you can't do with $1 billion. You know what I mean? So it's there's nothing you could do with $100 million that you really couldn't do with $50 million. So what is the point of all this money? Why is money necessarily the goal? I mean, even in art. Yeah, okay, I'd like to make more money doing what I'm doing, but I make enough money doing what I'm doing that I can, you know, do this podcast and travel when I need to travel and buy the gear that I generally want to buy and can keep doing it. Like, to me, that is a level of success that a lot of people don't have in what they want to do, you know? Would I like to make more money doing it? Sure, you know, if I could, if you know, but that's not my goal. My goal is to enjoy doing what I'm doing. And but for some people, maybe the goal is making a lot of money doing, I don't know, writing or photography or whatever it is, you know? I don't think that there's any entitlement towards that, but I think that there is, I think there is a responsibility of society to essentially change the way it does business to make the goal not be money, but happiness. Because I think there's a whole lot of money and there's a whole lot of like sad people in the world. And money obviously doesn't fix that. So what would, you know? So that's more of a political statement from my point of view, but I, you know, I don't know where it lay, where it lands in the end, you know? I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Somewhat.
I mean,
yeah.
You can disagree with me. I just, I don't know.
I think that there are a number of people who do have entitlement issues around creativity, making something. And I guess my question is...
And you think that that's unfair?
I don't know that it's unfair.
You think that's sour grapes? What do you think that it is?
I don't know. I'm trying to wrap my head around all
of it. But at the same time, there are people with entitlement issues about the fact that they were born into money. You know what I mean? So, and those people aren't better either. So, but they're entitled to their opinions, whether we agree with them or not, right?
Sure.
In some ways, I wish... You know, it's funny because that What Is a Photograph show at ICP, right? That was paid for in part by the NEA. Now, the NEA is brought up in, which is the National Endowment for the Arts, right? It's for anybody who's out in the outside of the US. So that's the federal government paying, has like an endowment that they give to artists to pay for stuff like this.
Right.
I particularly looked at that and said, this is where my tax dollars for art are going. I disagree with this. Now, there are people who do that and go, you know what that means? That means we shouldn't give any money away to Robert Mapplethorpe because he does stuff with sticking things up boys' butts or whatever it is, right? I disagree with that, so I don't want my stuff going there. But at the same time, the United States government has one of the lowest arts grant systems, you know, percentage of GDP.
Right.
Of almost any industrialized nation. Like, we don't give a lot of money to artists, you know? Right. And there are places like Canada, for instance, where they give more money for that stuff, grants and that kind of stuff, which lead to people like Arcade Fire being able to do what they do for a living, you know? And is that so wrong? You know, does that create a richer society in the end, which benefits everybody?
I think it can. And I've talked to a couple of photographers who are able to travel and create their bodies of work because of grants from their home countries.
Yep. There are a lot of artists out there too, some of which I know personally, some of whom have been, photographers of the week for our group.
Right.
Who I personally know don't make a lot of money doing what they do and have other sources of income.
Right.
You know, you know, even success within photography, look at how many people look, let's take, you know, what's his name? Saul, right? The original I'm taking pictures example, you know, if no one had rediscovered with air quotes, I'm making the little air quotes, Saul Leiter's work in the 90s, he would have died last year and no one would know his name. His stuff would be in boxes in an apartment. You know, he didn't make, I mean, yes, in the later years, he made a lot of money in those prints, but like, I don't even, he didn't show that he had any money. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he,
and if you
like
watch the film, he didn't cash all the checks that he was.
Yeah. He didn't issued. Want it.
Yeah.
So in some ways it's like, you know, the definition of success
and all part of that. Yeah. That's part of the question.
Yeah.
Is you look at Saul's a great example because here's a guy who got up every day.
Yep.
Arguably, you know,
yeah,
more days than not
for the argument, sake of argument, yeah,
yeah, and just went out and shot
because he liked
and didn't worry about what happened to it, where it went, where didn't worry about any of it.
Right. Now, you know, he used to. People knew his. He did do work in the early years. You know, he had enough money to buy his apartment and Soames' apartment next to it, so he didn't have to pay a lot to live. You know,
but how many people do you know? Today, circa 2014, that have that approach toward their art, whatever their art is, whether it's your friends at Paul Taylor, whether it's photography, whether it's painting, whether it's writing, not too many.
No.
Because at the end of the road, there better be a buck there.
And yeah.
That's
that makes you sad?
That's where I break down is that, yeah, I love what I'm doing as long as I'm getting paid for it.
Okay, because sometimes you seem to make the argument that if it's all about the buck, then of course it's all about the buck. It's all about the buck, and you seem like that's a good thing in when you make arguments. Sometimes, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, I just mean that like, well, who are these artists to be entitled to think that they can make a living at it? The world's you know built by money, and you know screw all that entitlement stuff. Who cares if it's what you want to do, you can't do it because society says no. So deal with it. That seems like
I'm not saying you can't do it. What I'm saying is in my perfect view, okay, you've got your way of looking at it.
Your perfect
view. In my perfect view, the art comes first.
Okay. Right.
And the money should be a byproduct of doing what you love.
I think that you and I have the same view from different angles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and it's also, look, for Saul, it was walking around the street and taking pictures of people when they weren't looking, you know?
Right.
For me.
Or Fred Herzog, another great example.
You know, absolutely.
In Vancouver. Yeah.
You know, for me, it's meeting my subjects and spending time with them. I get off on that personal thing.
You don't meet with a subject by and large unless there's already been.
Oh, I'd say half the pictures I take are non-paid personal stuff.
You think?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And hey, I did a whole year where I wasn't making any money doing it.
Right.
I love meeting with people. But it you know, I'm in a different world, right? You know, yeah, a landscape photographer can go out and just shoot on his own, whether he sells them, whether he doesn't sell them, whatever. I happen to be a portrait photographer, so, you know, yes, people are going to pay me to take portraits of them, you know.
Yeah, but I don't see them as different.
They're different in the sense that.
I mean, look at somebody like Danny Santos. Taking, you know, DannyStreet.com is his URL for those of you. Taking street portraits for years.
Yep.
Before he got noticed.
Right.
Just out there doing it.
Sure. Yeah.
In the same way that a landscape photographer would just go out to Joshua Tree or, you know, the Grand Canyon or wherever.
Right. Well, you know what? There gets to be a point, though, where you can't just shoot everything anybody asks you to for free because eventually you have to make enough money for work to pay your rent. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
So, you know, there's a thing where...
If that's what you're doing it for.
Right.
You know, well, there are plenty of listeners to this show that are maybe listening at their 9 to 5 or on the way to or
absolutely.
From... And really do only shoot at night or on the weekends or when they can.
And you know, some of them are very happy doing that because they just like taking pictures every once in a while and they don't want to do it for a living. Mm-hmm. Some of them who we know are frustrated, in air quotes again,
Right.
Artists who really don't like doing what they're doing for a living, but they need it for security purposes or whatever.
Sure.
Right? You know,
sure.
I happen to have structured my life in a way that I don't have stuff that forces me to think that way. You know what I mean? Like, I've been a freelancer for 14, 15 years. And I like living my life that way. It having not having a full-time job doesn't scare me in the way it scares some people. You know, I was listening to John Siracusa, you know, Hypercritical. And which is another 5x5 show, which if you're a nerd, listen to it. It's retired now, but there's 100 episodes and they're great. It's just John complaining about stuff. But in one of the episodes, he was talking about the fact that, you know, he has a 9-to-5 because the fear of freelance or entrepreneurial culture far overwhelms. Like, he's a security focused guy, and to him, security equals money, and therefore money has to be secure, and therefore I'm going to do this 9-to-5 job, and he's fine with that. He's happy with that.
Right.
I just don't like the idea that there are people living their lives who are going to have regrets in 20 years because a very, very wealthy society made it so that they were still sort of in the prison of living. You know what I mean? That's what makes me sad.
Yeah, but you've also got... You're in a very fortunate situation.
Okay.
I mean, yes, you make money. Your partner makes money.
Yeah, right.
You are in a very fortunate situation.
Yes, I'm very lucky to, both of us, you know, we just split the bills down the middle and everything's good.
It's very easy to have that point of view. If that were not the case, like it is for many people.
Yeah. What would I do if I couldn't do this for money or didn't make enough money? Sure.
Yeah.
Then
this sort of, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs kicks in and you go, okay, what do I need? What do I have to do?
Yeah.
So it's definitely,
for some people that's a reality and some people that's a fear, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There are plenty of people on our group who are good enough photographers that if they wanted to do it for a living and really worked at it, they could probably make a living. Maybe not the same living they're currently making, but maybe they're not willing to give up a new lease car every 3 years. You know what I mean? Because they really like that. Or maybe they don't want to live in a different place, or, you know what I mean?
Or maybe you have to do event photography or seniors or weddings some other photography that's not your focus.
Yes.
To fill that gap.
Sure. Yeah. And we all differ on that. Like, for me, I don't want to do that stuff.
You don't have to.
True. I don't have to. Right.
And that, I think that's, at least in terms of this particular portion of the discussion, that's the point I'm trying to make, is you are afforded your way of looking at it because of the position that you're in.
Yeah, but the position that I'm in is that I've been able to make a living doing it?
No. Yes. Whether on your own or whether helped or whether...
Well, I was on my own for 13 years, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but that's also a difficult situation because, like, okay, if I couldn't make a living doing this, of course I wouldn't be able to make a living doing it, you know? It's not like I have some sort of external help in doing it, you know?
No, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is that your perception is from, each of our perceptions is from where we are.
Yes. I wish that more people would have the opportunity that I have being able to do what they love to do.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that in a world,
unfortunately, if that were the case, there wouldn't be any transmission repairmen. There wouldn't be any custodians.
Doing that stuff. You know,
nuclear reactor technician or whatever. Right. I don't know. You know.
Yeah, but not everyone wants to be an artist. You know, there's a lot of people who enjoy doing all of those things. You know, maybe the guy who's a transmission repairman
to support the economy.
Yeah, maybe not. But I feel like there's got to be I don't know. I just feel like there's got to be a better way that everything that capitalism ringing out and everything that it does is good. You know, the invisible hand is good.
Right.
I just, in a world and especially in a country like ours where there is so much wealth, I just think it's crazy. But that wealth
is held onto by so few.
Right. That's what I'm saying. And I'm not saying there should be some large scale restructure. I'm just saying, you know what? There's got to be a better way to do this, you know, or ways to tilt this in a direction where people don't feel forced. I mean, even, you know, the healthcare law in America, like being able to know that if you have cancer, you don't have to state your job, that you can still buy insurance, you know, if you leave your job and start a business, like that's a huge deal for a lot of people. A lot of people were literally forced. My mother had to take a job when my father got sick. My mother had to get a job that covered my father because he couldn't get insurance for his cancer.
Right.
You know, this was 20 years ago. So, you know, there's lots of situations like that that are just like, oh, well, that's the way the system works. It's like, well, the system sucks then. You know, there's got to be something better.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I Canada. Just, well, you know, there are arguments to be made in multiple things, but I don't think artists, just to wrap that discussion up, I don't think artists should be in that. Anybody who wants to make art should automatically be able to make a living doing it.
Right.
But I also don't think it should get to the point where almost no artists can make a living because it's so devalued in society. And other things are so valued in society that personally, you know, I don't think pushing money around in a computer should make as much money as it makes, you know?
Right.
So we can disagree on this and everyone can make their rationalizations, but I don't know. There's something about it that stinks. That's all I'm saying. I don't know.
Something stinks in Denmark.
All right. Let's talk about social media.
It's a big thing.
Yeah, it is.
You know, Alan asked us about it. On the Twitter.
Yeah.
On the Twitter.
Well, last Thursday or something, last Friday?
Something like that. And it sparked some back and forth, which I found fascinating and I found really interesting. And I wish, to be honest, I wish we did more of it.
You know, you have a note in the show notes that I think is what it really comes down to. And again, I think this is another place where you and I largely agree and are just coming at it from different angles. You put in here real networking versus fake networking.
Mm-hmm.
I completely agree. It's the fake networking that I don't like. If people are, look, I have a lot of friends. I know a lot of people. Like people who know me personally are always just like, wow, you know everybody. You know somebody and everything. Like that's just what I do, right? But to me, that's just me liking meeting people. I'm not... There's a friend of mine who shall remain nameless, who goes to parties and basically talks to you until she finds out what you do. And if it's not something that's useful to her, she ends the conversation and moves on to the next person.
Right.
That to me is disgusting. Like that sort of like predatory networking stuff.
Yeah.
Like that's... Well,
this all comes back around to... a person that I find amazing, and that is Seth Godin.
Okay.
Who I still think is one of the best portraits you've done in the last 5 years.
Okay.
But that's neither here nor there. And this is all extrapolated from reading Seth Godin books, where he talks about, you know, we are stuck in a culture that is checking Facebook 50 times a day and looking at hits on your website and looking at likes and looking at click-throughs and all this other crap that really doesn't mean anything.
Right.
It's all a fantasy.
Okay.
And where the real value is in social media is building relationships. And separating and being able to recognize and separate what you just said, the real networking versus the fake networking.
Yeah. Yeah.
You being followed by photographers.
Yep.
May in some way lead to work or something interesting to augment your career, but it probably won't.
Right. True.
It probably won't.
Yeah.
But saying that people that hire you don't pay attention to social media, which you've said a couple times, is complete malarkey. Because they do. Every person that you get hired by has somebody working in social media.
Okay. So maybe that's like saying, if you say that people who don't take your phone call, the people who hire you all own phones, so therefore they want to hear from you when you make phone calls to them.
I'm not saying they want to hear from you, but you have said that they don't pay attention to social media, which is ridiculous. Everybody pays attention to social
media. Okay, yes, they pay attention to social media, but I don't think that your average art buyer is looking for photographers on Twitter.
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
Because I think photography is changing so much that everybody is looking for the next somebody.
Yeah, okay, yes, in a very general sense, that's true. But I, you know, the majority of people that I know, look, if you're a fashion shooter or a street shooter or a lifestyle shooter, yes, get Tumblr accounts, try to get your stuff Pinterested all over the place.
But portrait shooters are somehow exempt from that?
No, they're not exempt from that, but look, I don't have a huge, I don't cultivate my social media in some crazy way, right? Like I've got, I don't know, 3,000 people on Google Plus, a couple thousand on Twitter, some kind of thing like that, right?
But why don't you? This is your business. This is not just your personal life.
No,
this
sure.
This is your business.
Okay, see, there's part of it is that I don't separate my business from my personal life in that way.
No, and in fact, you kind of find business to be a dirty word.
I do, yeah.
Which I think hinders.
Maybe it does.
I think it does because it is your professional life. This is your business.
So give me an example of things that I should do things that I would do to improve my social media standing.
I can't give you examples of what you should do because the first thing you should do is to be authentic.
Right.
And that is something personal to you. I can't tell you what's authentic for you.
Look, I was writing on takingpictures.com since 2008.
Right.
And there are, 150 essays and all kinds of stuff and pictures I've written and behind the scenes things and making of and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for years and would put it out into the world and it wouldn't get me a whole lot more followers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The return on investment that I found in doing that stuff didn't add up for me. Could it?
But the return on investment of this show has.
Sure. So I did something different. And now we're doing the show.
But this is authentic to you, isn't it?
Oh, it totally is. But again, I don't think any of our, out of our whatever thousands and thousands of listeners, I don't think that we're 100 episodes in and none of our listeners have ever hired me. You know what I mean? I haven't gotten any work because of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So, I do this because I love it and I love talking to you and you know what I mean?
Right.
That's all great. But I don't do this to improve my career. You know what I'm saying? My authenticity in this is that I love having discussions with you and talking to the listeners and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But it's not, this isn't a strategic or a tactical move in order to improve my business. And I think that's where things get icky for me.
Mm-hmm.
Where somebody says, I'm going to write these posts that are all about such and such because that'll get me more, views over here, which I don't know.
But you're competing with people who do those things.
Absolutely, I am. And yes, I might be worse off for that. But how do I do it without becoming the thing that I really think is gross? And I've yet to be able to answer that question. And I know you say, yes, you have to be authentic. But I feel like I am being authentic. It's not like I'm not on Twitter or I don't write on my blog or I don't do any of those things. I do that stuff all the time, I'm not disagreeing with you. I agree with you in theory. It's the specifics that I get stuck on, I would love to have 100,000 Twitter followers, And there are some photographers out there with 100,000 Twitter followers. And it's not necessarily because they're great photographers or great writers or great whatever.
Right.
It could be that one of the things that they wrote somehow got picked up by somebody and became viral for a day and a half. And so a bunch of people followed them. And now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what, do you just keep writing until one of your things goes viral? Or do you write things so that they are viral? I wrote that, I did that guest post on Kelby.com last year, right?
Right.
And I wrote what I thought was an interesting post about dealing with your subjects while taking pictures and how different people are different and subjects, whatever it is. And a good friend of mine, mentioned, he's like, hey, I saw your thing on Kelby the other day. I go, oh, yeah, it was fun. And he goes, yeah, it wasn't really all that interesting. That's why you didn't get a lot of hits on it, because you didn't basically make a stink. You didn't write something with kerosene on it, therefore it didn't light a fire. Essentially, you know what I mean?
So had it been some sort of tell-all or some sort of snarky thing, that would have been...
That was sort of the implication of what he was saying to me. And I was just like, well, I would never do that, because that's not me, right?
Right.
You know? Now, am I worse off for not spilling more stories?
I don't think you're worse off. I don't think you're worse off.
Yeah. I don't know. I often find that a lot of that stuff, when I do it, when other people do it, somehow it feels pandering to me.
Hmm.
It feels like I'm writing a post. You know, there's a lot of workshops that, you know, people go to where it's almost like they're, there was an episode of CSI the other day. And Gene Simmons was on it. I don't know if anybody watched CSI.
Gene Simmons, like Kiss Gene Simmons?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the story surrounded around some place in where rich people could go in Las Vegas to basically rock out with a rock star. Basically play rock star for the day.
Like a band camp type thing?
Yeah. It was okay. Like, you know, you pay...
Like rock and roll fantasy camp or
exactly.
something?
Exactly. You pay 25 grand and we'll get Gene Simmons to come in here and play with your band for 2 hours or whatever it is, right? That was the argument of the show. That was the part of the plot. And you see a lot of people who go to these like high-end workshops on cruise ships and all this kind of stuff. And they're lawyers and doctors who have very expensive equipment who go do this on their free time, almost sort of playing professional photographer. That's what it feels like, a very similar thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I feel like even writing these posts about this stuff, I feel like who I'm talking to is those people, and those people don't interest me, you know? Now, am I also talking to the, you know, 18-year-old kid who really loves photography and maybe get something out of what I write? Maybe. Yeah. But I feel like the industry in general, and a lot of the blogs that are out there, photo stuff, is just sort of pandering to the person who's it's like it's all a big fantasy, you know.
So people, it sounds like what you're saying is that it's largely unnecessary, and that people should just see your work and that should be enough.
No, I'm saying that. Well, in an ideal world, yes. But what I'm saying is that yes, I can do all those things. I could write all these posts. I could put out all this stuff on social media. Not like I don't do any of that stuff, but I could do more, I guess. But if that's competing, then I feel like there's something wrong, you know? Like we're moving further and further away from what it should be about.
Yeah,
in some way.
You don't get to pick what it should be about. You get to react to what it is about.
Yeah, but at the same time, I can choose not to add to the noise that I think is going to burn itself out. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to burn itself out anytime soon.
Yeah,
all evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I mean, go look at any of these sites that we normally talk about, and look at the last 10 posts.
Yeah,
how much actual value is there? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same stuff over and over again. It's Cosmo. It's 10 exercises to get your buns in shape for summer.
Right.
Who cares?
Which, I'll be honest with you, only the first four of those really work.
Yeah. But, you know, that thing has been written 100 times.
Right.
Why are we doing this again?
5 ways to get sharper photos.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, what? Who is this helping? You know, I wrote a post the other day about, like, tips that I had for using Lightroom. And there's lots of things about Lightroom. There's tons of tips, things about Lightroom on the internet. I wrote literally 5 things that I've noticed over the years of using Lightroom that make it easier for me to use Lightroom that aren't necessarily the kinds of things that you would automatically realize, mm-hmm. you know? And I think they're actually good tips. They're not like, organize your photos with keywords, you know?
It's and were there conversations that began as a result of that?
Yeah. There were people on, you know, Twitter and Facebook and the group where people were like, oh, wow, that's a really good idea. And that's fine, you know?
But isn't that real?
Yes, it's totally real. But like, I can't spend 3 hours a day writing posts. I'm, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that that necessarily makes me a better photographer. It makes me a more public photographer, maybe, you know, or more well-known, more well-renowned photographer. But I don't know that it makes me, it doesn't make me a better photographer.
I would say that it makes you a more relatable photographer.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Yeah. Maybe you're right. But I
don't know that I am, but that's what I get out of it. When I see you posting things that, and this is going to get me into trouble.
Go ahead.
That matter.
Yeah.
That don't come off as just sort of random geekery.
Right.
I hear you talk about them with more result. Like, there's been interaction. There have been questions raised.
Yeah,
or
but
conversations.
There's 400 quadrillion tweets a day. Interaction is what is that? And 50 cents buys me half a cup of coffee. You know, that's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just so much noise and there's so much back and forth. And how often do we sit here talking about how likes on a Facebook picture don't matter?
Right.
Now you're saying they do matter?
I'm not saying they do matter.
So what matters?
I'm not saying that, in fact, I'm saying just the opposite of that, that there is too much emphasis being placed on how many likes. It's, you know, it's.
There should be less social media, but more quality social media.
It's a quality versus quantity.
Okay. That's a fair argument. But if everyone else isn't playing those rules, then.
You know, I just in the past couple of weeks, I've had Twitter conversations with people all over the country that I haven't met before.
Right.
But by the same token, there have been 400 million messages about what kind of sandwich you had. So, yes, right. There are those very polarized ends of the spectrum, but you've got to find your way through it.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
If you're going to embrace it, and I'm not saying that everyone has to,
right.
But I think that the tool is there, and if used, I don't want to say properly or improperly, but if used genuinely,
yeah.
It can be a genuine benefit.
Yes. I just wonder if that amount of time spent on something else wouldn't be even more beneficial. That's my question. And there's no way for us to measure that. So
right. There are no metrics for that.
You know, I just know that of years of being in the public eye as a photographer, I have lots of people who love my work and lots of people who follow me. But that doesn't make me a better photographer. And while there are friends of mine, people on Facebook who get me hired for jobs, I did a job yesterday that was recommended by a guy I know on Facebook. I also know him in real life. And right. He's a big Twitter guy, huge Twitter guy. And he just, you know, he recommended me to a friend and, you know, I do this job that I keep doing more of for them. It happens, but that didn't come because of stuff I wrote. That came because I know the guy in person and I've shook his hand and we get along and I've taken his picture. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I feel like the personal relationships are worth far more than social media relationships. In my experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's part of that. I have a lot of people who I would consider friends of mine that I've met through social media.
Sure, yeah.
And that if I said, hey, I'm going to be in your city, you know, can we go hang out or can I crash on your couch or can we, you know, that there would be more yeses than nos.
Absolutely. And I am going to Seattle in 2 weeks and I will put out a thing saying if anybody wants to meet up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's where I think the benefit is.
And that's all.
And that's
fun.
Why I put real versus fake in the show
but
notes.
But that does not replace reality.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. Yeah. I think it's a means to enhance.
Yes.
And that's true. If you're hiding in social media.
Yep.
That's one thing. But if it becomes simply another tool on your belt, then that's something else entirely.
Yeah.
And that's what I want it to be. I want it to be sort of, you know, my social media Leatherman kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? If you're going out and you're writing and you're tweeting and you really do enjoy doing it, that's great. But if you sit there and go, I need to put 2.2 tweets out per day and need to do it this way.
No. And I'm not suggesting
When you said strategy the other day on Twitter and I was just like, strategy, that's what it sounded like to me. It sounded mm-hmm. like a media strategy that I used to put together back when I sold Colgate.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that to me is just the antithesis of what I'm trying to get out of my life. You know? So anyway, it's an interesting discussion. I don't know that it ends anywhere. You know what I mean?
I don't think it ends anywhere, and I don't think it should. I just like discussing it. Getting into these kinds of discussions. It's one of the things I love about doing this show.
Yeah. Yeah. See, again, though, I don't think we disagree. I just think that we're looking at it differently.
Probably. We land pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should talk about one of our sponsors today.
One of our sponsors.
Well, we have multiple sponsors. So, no,
let's pick one.
We only have one today, actually.
Wheel of sponsor. Turn, yeah. Turn, turn. Tell us all what we must learn.
Today's sponsor, Squarespace, Jeffrey. Do you want to go take a look and see if they have any new templates or anything like that?
Little Animaniacs reference.
Animaniacs.
Such a great.
Okay, crazy lady. Bye-bye.
Yeah. If you're not watching Animaniacs, go watch Animaniacs.
Pinky and the Brain's where it's at.
Wait,
tell you a little Pinky and the Brain story before Squarespace?
Sure.
When I first moved to New York, Boston to go to school.
Boston.
When I first moved to Boston, I was living on Comm Ave where Berkeley had a dorm. And inside the Prudential Mall, like right underneath the Prudential building, there was a WB store. This is 95, maybe. And they had a sign up: this Saturday, come meet Pinky and the Brain. Right. And I was like, oh, this is going to be cool. Like, it's, you know, whatever. And I go there and there's a guy, two people in Pinky and the Brain, like costumes outside the front of the store.
Okay.
And I was like, lame. Right. Like, I always thought, you know, whatever. But then I look.
Pinky and the Lame.
Yeah. Then I look and in the back of the store are two guys sitting at a table signing autographs.
And what? They're the voices.
They're the voices. And
nice.
I go inside and I didn't get in line because, I mean, I'm not an autograph guy, you know, but I just wanted to see him and whatever. So I go sort of the end of the line and they're talking to little kids in the voices.
Oh, that's so cool.
I think so, Brain.
Yeah, but, yeah. You know,
and it was just kind of, and I was just,
thinking what I'm thinking, yeah. Pinky.
And I just for a second there, I was just like, is that really mess up kids? Like to see some guy speaking the voice of the thing on a TV.
You know, there was a great story that Mark Hamill tells of doing the Joker voice for a little kid in a toy store.
Yeah.
But he said, you have to turn around.
Ah. So they don't see your mouth.
So you don't see me doing it.
Yeah.
I'll do it, but you have to turn around. And I thought that was kind of neat because it still kind of
that's a good idea.
Suspends that disbelief.
Yeah, yeah,
you
know? Yeah. Anyway, Squarespace. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own website. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code REFINEYOURVISION.
What?
Yeah.
They've got
new ones?
From nationally, some of the brands that are using Squarespace, you think to yourself, Squarespace, who uses them?
Oh, Bill uses it.
who uses Squarespace?
Yeah.
Well, you know, how about Target, HBO, GQ, Cisco?
Did they really?
Not that Cisco, the other one. Sony. Look at all these. You're in good company.
Yes.
So, you know, give it a shot.
It's crazy good stuff. Squarespace,
Volvo.
They're constantly updating their platform with new features, new designs, more support. They have beautiful templates for you to start with, tons of style options for you to adjust so you can really create your own space online. Everything is drag and drop, so it's easy to add content from your desktop or even rearrange elements of content within a page. I love that layout engine too. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it is.
Could you imagine coding that?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Squarespace makes sure your site looks automatically great on any device because Squarespace website, each one has its own unique mobile design. So you go to billwadman.com on your phone and you get my pictures nice and good on the phone. And I didn't have to do anything special.
Nice and good.
There you go. You can easily connect Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Instagram, Google, and many other web and social services. Squarespace has an e-commerce platform on their platform. So if you want to set up a shop and sell things, you can do that in just a few minutes. And e-commerce is now in every single plan level. You can sell, I think, one thing for the low $8 a month plan, and you can have X amount for the $16 a month plan or unlimited for the $24 a month plan. So if you want to set up like a tip jar on your website, you could do that in the $8 a month plan. It's incredibly easy to use, but if you need some help, over 70 Squarespace employees are on the customer care team based in New York. They're available for live chat during the week and have super fast email support throughout the day and night.
Hey, so, do we have any listeners that took advantage of the come check us out if you want to work for us weekend?
I don't know.
You know?
I don't know. We got to find out because that happened this weekend.
Right.
We're going to have to find out. We'll put a, let us know if you guys have. And as I said earlier, you could try Squarespace for free. You don't need a credit card. None required to check it out. And if you decide to purchase, starts at just $8 a month, includes a domain name if you sign up for a year. Make sure to get 10% off and support the show by using the offer code REFINEYOURVISION. So thank you very much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures.
They've got this new logo generator thing too.
Yeah, it's actually kind of fun. I wish they need to add some more doodads, bin
vectors, yeah, icons.
Yeah, in the left hand side.
Use your words, Wadman.
What's the font called with all those things in it?
I don't know.
Dingbats. They need to add more dingbats.
That's not dingbats, is it?
Yeah.
No.
Doesn't like dingbats have all those things? Right.
Or let you import an Illustrator file or an EPS, yeah, exactly, or an SVG, yep, or yep, something, yep, like that.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a very, very cool little tool. It's better than most people have to use for that stuff. You can create a nicer logo.
I just made a new logo for you.
You did?
Yeah.
Send
it
over.
It's got a big mustache. It just says Wadman. It's got a big mustache.
I played with that one, yeah. I actually did play with that. And then I thought people would think that I had a mustache. That was the reason why I didn't do that.
That would be awesome. You should rock a handlebar mustache.
Oh, God. You know, my facial hair comes in sort of gray and red now. Red. Isn't that weird? Red. All right. We got a lot of stuff to go through before you have to get going. So where do you want to start? Where would you like to continue, I guess?
That's right. That's right. This, I got to tell you, this thing... this imaging resource, the NPA have given their humanitarian award to this photographer who intervened. There was a woman was screaming for help in Florida outside of her SUV. Apparently, her baby nephew had stopped breathing. Running to help, Al Diaz put his job as a journalist second, acting as a decent human being first, making sure the situation was at hand, fetching trained assistance, and making sure emergency services were on the way before reaching for his camera. And for his remarkable actions, Diaz had just been given the NPPA's humanitarian award. What do you think of this? Do you think he should have done his job as a photographer first, or no, did he do his job as a human first, and we should applaud him for that?
Life first, picture second. Mm-hmm. That's my vote. Mm-hmm. Well, look, if this is, again, we've discussed this before, but you know, unless you're actually in a war zone where soldiers are there to kill each other, in which case get out of the way because they have guns.
Yeah,
you know, all these other things where it's photographs. You know, there was a case recently in New York City where a guy had fallen onto the tracks of the subway. And a subway car was coming down, and some guy, instead of helping him up, took out a camera and started taking pictures of the guy on the track.
Oh,
who ended up getting killed.
I think I saw that.
Yeah. And he said, oh, I wasn't taking pictures. I was flashing the flash to get the driver to notice and slow down.
Right.
Oh, but he just happened to have these pictures. Would you, the New York Post, like to buy them? And whenever I bring this up, Conrad gets all mad because she always brings this guy up. It's just like, come on, you're a human first. No picture is more important than a human life, you know? So if some kid can't breathe, you go get help. You don't pull out a camera, you know? Make sure that kid lives. That's my view, my ethos, you know?
Okay. So you think this was good that they recognized and awarded this person?
I think that is very important and very good.
Right,
I think that things get, I think that the journalistic integrity, I have to stay out of things stuff is interesting in theory, but when it comes down to it, no baby should die because you didn't feel like you should get involved because you had a pen and paper in your hand, you know?
Right.
But you know, that's my, so yes, I am pro them giving this thing.
Good stuff.
Al Diaz. We give him
Al
some
Diaz.
I'm going to put his website in the show notes.
Hats off, Al.
As a little thank you here.
Yep. Good idea.
Good stuff. Hey, we also got that Jack White video somebody sent in.
Yes.
Which is good and long and good.
Yeah, it is. It's a series that Conan O'Brien does called Serious Jibber Jabber.
Yep. Which and, I think really should be a podcast feed, but it's not.
I agree. Yeah,
I would love to have that. I'd love to listen to that on the subway or whatever it is.
Yeah. And he's talked to some interesting folks. He's talked to Martin Short. He's talked to Judd Apatow. He talked to Mel Brooks right after Sid Caesar died, which was a really – there's a lot of mutual respect there between – you know, Mel thought the way Conan handled Sid Caesar's death and sort of paying tribute to him was really – it's just – it was a nice interview. I really liked it.
Right.
But this one, this Jack White interview – pretty cool.
Yeah, there's now I'm gonna quote from Ian Siegel, one of our listeners sent this in, and he actually transcribed a few segments of it. So I'm gonna read from some of the segments. Is that fair?
Yeah.
What do you
and
think?
Now
about
we're reading from the book of Ian.
This is now I'm gonna quote, and then I'm gonna ask what you think about it. Right.
All right. I don't have these in advance, so this is our lightning round.
Jack White says
episode 99 lightning round.
We should do this every week.
That's right.
Jack White says authenticity is a trap. It's a waste of everybody's time.
Disagree.
Disagree. Okay.
Why would you be anything but authentic? Why try to
Maybe what he's saying is that trying to be authentic is a waste of your time, because isn't what you would normally do being authentic?
I know a few people who are anything but authentic. Okay. And that's just the way they are. You really have to pry to get into, you know, the nougaty center of their authenticity.
Okay. Jack says, technology is about making things less labor intensive. There's an idea of responsibility. New technology means new responsibilities. As a photographer, he even brings in photographers here. As a photographer, you can cheat on everything. To take the easy way out as a photographer is not always fulfilling.
Agree.
He also, absolutely. He tends to use instruments that are hard to play.
Yes.
Because he likes the struggle.
Yeah. Now, even to the point of like, you know, putting incorrect strings on guitars so they are harder to play.
Right. Now, you know what?
I mean,
Jack White is one of those people.
Wait,
go ahead.
Go back for a second. So are we seeing the inauthentic Jack White? Are we seeing a pastiche of the people he thinks he should be? Or are we seeing who he really is?
Yeah. Sometimes whenever I see, like, what's the documentary?
It Might Get Loud.
Right.
Which is amazing.
Which is that on Netflix? It's probably on Netflix.
No, it is not.
It is not. It was for a while.
It was for a while, but it's
okay,
not.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm sure you can go find it somewhere. I'll put a link in the show notes. So that's Jack White, The Edge from U2, and Jimmy Page basically having a conversation.
From Awesome.
Yeah, it's really good. Now, personally, I think that Jack White is a little out of his league with those two other guys. Although The Edge tends to use way too many effects for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
Jack White's one of those people I respect far more than I actually like his work. You know, like I think he's in it for the right reasons. I don't necessarily like what he makes.
Okay.
If that makes any sense. Here's one good quote of his though here. Jack said, "You never arrive."
I hope that's the case.
Yeah. I think that's really
good. It gets
good.
Us back to our discussions that we've had about mastery. And when you, by and large, if you have mastered something, you've got nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
So I hope that that's true, that you do never arrive. I hope that it's a, maybe you get to this one sort of interim station, but there's still another leg of the journey.
Yeah. You know, Conan said, if the Beatles were around today, we would be sick of them before they came out of the Cavern Club. There's no discovery anymore. There's too much data.
That's a tough one, because there are some people that didn't get really good until their second or third or even fourth record.
Sure. But nowadays,
you know, if you killed Pink Floyd before 1973.
Yep.
You never would have gotten Dark Side.
And same thing with Hall & Oates and a whole bunch of other people. Yeah. I guess the question is, has it gotten to the point where it's so easy to get out there that it's almost too easy. You know what I mean? That like in the old days, I hate using the term, but just for the sake of this argument, that you paid your dues for a while before you percolated up to the top. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know what? Everybody can find a pencil. That doesn't mean you're Hemingway.
No, but if you find a pencil and you work at it for 5-6 years, shouldn't that work? I guess I'm saying is that the world of writers or photographers or whatever it is, guy picks up a camera today, takes a decent picture on the street, puts it up. It could become this world famous thing tomorrow, right?
True.
Is it almost too easy for that to happen nowadays? Where
I think it's easy for it to happen, but I think it's a dangerous argument inviting a meritocracy that, well, I've put in 20 years, so I should have.
It's not all about the time, but I think that there's an argument to be made that there's that time tends to separate the wheat from the chaff a little bit, you know? People are not going to do it for 10 years if they suck at it. You know?
And is anyone going to be listening to Justin Bieber in 20 years'
exactly.
time?
Exactly. No. Look, Conan probably says, not. I really like, I like to work really hard. I believe in hard work. Talent is overrated. It's important, but the real coefficient is hard work. It's the mystery number that makes everything work. And Jack said, all of our idols, they seem to be working consistently over and over again. Now, the question is, are they consistently working over and over again because they make really good work that people want? You know, there's plenty of people who work for years and never get noticed. And there's plenty of people who have one hit wonder and then keep working, but no one notices the other stuff.
I think talent and hard work need to enjoy a sort of symbiotic relationship, that one without the other is dangerous.
Yep. Yes, I agree.
And one without the other is not very fulfilling.
No. And here's Conan. Comfort kills the artistic impulse.
Completely.
Jack says, what good can come from comfort? As an artist, you have to work 3 times as hard as somebody with a punch clock job. You have to start from a blank canvas every time. How do you create in a situation where you're comfortable? He likes to push himself harder and not take it easy. I like it.
I would agree with that. I think that obstacles, you know, I mean, even think about something, go back to school, whether it's grade school or, you know, high school or whatever. The hardest things to write for me were the open-ended things, like write whatever you want. I just need 4 paragraphs. Write whatever you want.
Yeah.
That was the hardest thing for me.
Yeah.
Give me a barrier. Give me some sort of obstacle. You have to write 1 paragraph about 1 moment in, you know, whatever it is, you know, or use 4 colors to paint a painting. Don't use everything. Or, you know, you've got 8 pictures.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why we like doing those little things on the show.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's a really good, excellent article or a video rather, interview. For this kind
agree.
Of stuff.
Yeah, it's good.
Again, very much in keeping with the kind of discussions you and I have all the time.
Yes. Which both online and off.
Yeah, right, exactly.
This is where we choose to live.
Okay, but here's what kind of bothers me a little bit about this. Conan's right. having this conversation with Jack White, right?
Yes.
Conan doesn't talk about this stuff. How many people are going to go watch this interview? I mean, I guess I can look at exactly how many people have watched the interview. But
406,193.
Right. And how many people went and saw it multiple times? Probably a lot. But 400,000 versus how many people watch Conan's show in the amount of time this has been up since, you know, since January 3rd last year. You know what
right.
I mean? So no, it's sad that the people who are interested in having these conversations, which I think are the more interesting conversations about life and not... Oh, you just moved into a new house on Hollywood Hills. Like, tell me that silly anecdote about the movie you just made. Like,
true, but in its defense, it is the highest watched. It's got the most numbers of any of the serious jibber jabbers that he's put up so far.
Okay,
that includes the cast of The Simpsons. That includes Judd Apatow.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
So I'm comforted at least by people watching this and hopefully discussing it with their friends, family, or coworkers or whatever afterwards, because there are some really interesting points that both sides make about work, creativity, and even entitlement.
Yeah. I guess I look at this and wish that this was Conan's show. As much as I like Conan.
My show.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I want to talk to Jack White.
I wish this kind of stuff was the number one show on television.
Or whatever, absolutely. Instead of, so what was it really like to work with?
Exactly.
You know,
right.
Whoever.
I mean, like, look, we're the number one show in podcasting.
Yes. But ever. ever. In fact, you know what happened? We were so far into the number one that it broke the counter and threw us back down. That's what happened.
Bastards.
I know it.
Crappy coders.
Stupid iTunes.
Yeah.
Get some Squarespace coders up in here.
Exactly. Anyway, I'll put the link in the show notes. You guys can go watch it. It's long, but it's well worth it if you're into that kind of stuff.
Yes.
You put up a link, 18 things creative people do differently.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. And we'll just go through them real quick. I encourage you to go look at this.
Yep.
The list is as follows, and I won't spend too much time on it. Number one, they daydream, which I spent most of my life daydreaming, and that doesn't make me creative. It just means that that's one thing on this list that I do a lot.
Okay.
They observe everything.
Okay.
Which I think is observation is very important to creativity. They work the hours that work for them.
Okay.
They make time for solitude.
Okay.
They turn life's obstacles around. This is one I have a problem with. That's a tough one for me.
Okay.
They seek out new experiences.
Yep.
And new life and boldly go where... No, wait, what? they fail up.
Okay.
That's an interesting one too. They ask the big questions.
Okay.
They people watch, although I think they people watch, that's kind of doubling up for their observant.
Yeah.
They take risks. That's another one that I have a hell of a time with that one.
Yeah.
They view all of life as an opportunity for self-expression. They follow their true passions. They get out of their own heads. Man, what's that like?
Do artists really get out of their own heads?
I don't think so.
Keep going.
They lose track of the time.
Okay.
They surround themselves with beauty. I would say that more accurate would be they surround themselves with interest. Things that are interesting. I find a lot of art anything but beautiful. It's interesting. It's evocative. But
sure.
there are a lot of pieces, famous pieces, that I wouldn't use beauty to describe them.
Right.
They connect the dots. That one's a little ambiguous.
Jeffrey, you could argue that I like the list and I agree with a lot of these things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, these are things that everyone should be doing. Not just artists, and it's not artists do. So in some ways, it's kind of like, if you really want to be happy, you should, you know, wake up in the morning. It's like, yeah, okay, everybody wakes up.
In the morning.
You know,
well, like, go take a look. I don't want to spend too much time on it. Yeah. It's interesting. See what you think. What do you do? What do you not do?
Yeah.
Maybe we can continue it on the group.
You know, one thing I will say about these kinds of lists, though, and you're right. Your view is that, you know, you might find something in one of these lists that actually changes the way you see things. You know, that's
or it clicks.
Right. Yep.
You know, you're not ready to hear it until you're ready to hear it.
Right. I guess my thing is that I feel like whenever I personally try to consciously make changes in this way, it doesn't work, because if I'm not doing it naturally, then it's not really me. And by trying to force it, it doesn't work. Like that.
Yeah, but what if you're stuck in bad behavior? That's like saying, well, until I realize that I'm, you know.
I guess I'm just saying that trying to force, you know, the best things that artists can do are these five things. Like, either you do them or you don't do them. It may be that those things don't work for you, or they never have, or they won't, and that's why you don't do them, not because you're a bad artist, you know?
I'm just a fan of mixing it up.
A fan of mixing it up too.
You know,
I guess I just don't.
Around.
That's true. Yeah.
Hey, we got to wrap this up because I need to go over to Calumet and pick up some stuff.
Oh. Yeah. Can we talk about that?
I think we should.
So
this was no bueno. This was no bueno way to handle this.
Calumet is a photo store originally based in Chicago, had ones in LA and New York and where else?
I don't remember where all the other stores are.
Interestingly enough, they were one of the few camera stores that are open on Saturdays in New York City, because Adorama and B&H and the rest are run by Jewish families who are closed on the Sabbath. And they just shut down without notice, what, last Thursday or something?
Yeah. No notice at all. People showed up for work and the doors were locked. Yeah. They released a statement on their Facebook page. See, social media works.
To screw people.
Yeah. After 75 years of business, it is with a heavy heart that we will announce our immediate closing in the United States. It has been a joy to share our passion for photography with you for all of these years. We will miss each other and miss all of our customers. Thank you for everything. So here's kind of what's what I find interesting and maybe rotten in Denmark is the court papers that they filed are declaring that they have less than $50,000 in assets.
Yeah. How'd that happen?
Wouldn't you think just the LA or New York stores would have 50K in just rental gear?
Yeah, sure. They were moving stuff around, I bet.
And they say somewhere between, and this is another kind of funny thing, they've got between 1 million and 10 million in liabilities. You can't get closer than a $9 million window.
Right. Yeah. It just strikes me as odd.
Yeah, it strikes me as odd.
You know, somebody on one of the comments on some website said, so I guess my $2,000 gift certificate somebody gave me a few weeks ago is no good.
Yeah.
That would suck.
Somebody said, I think it was Joey L. even that tweeted, wish I would have rented, you know, a bunch of lighting gear yesterday or something.
Yeah. I wonder.
Yeah, I mean, what if you rented for a week you rented a medium format camera and a lighting kit?
Yeah.
Are they going to send somebody to your house? Or
probably.
Yeah.
They probably still expect you to return it. I don't know. I just, you know, look, this is another example of, how different, how things have gotten, you know? I mean, look, where did you buy your last camera?
Where did I buy my last camera? Amazon, I think.
Right.
No. B&H. I'm sorry. B&H.
Okay. But you ordered over the mail, through the mail.
No, I flew to New York and walked in and got it and then came home. Yeah.
Haven't flown to New York yet. That's funny. Thanks for reminding us. Wise ass. That's the thing is that like I order my cameras from Seattle. And right.
It's not the closing that I have a problem with. It's the way they did it. You know, one of the comments here is this fellow writes, so my wife is just told not to come to work. She's out of a job, no HR mention, no mention of a final paycheck, no mention of what to do about insurance, nothing. Really?
Yeah, that's super crappy. Look, it's, you know, these big companies, you know, this is my whole thing with companies. Whenever somebody's at some job and they're looking for a new job and somebody finds out at their old job and they come into them and go, can't believe you're doing this to us, going to abandon us, whatever it is. It's like, you know what? Your company would screw you so fast if it came down to like a bottom line.
But this is, I mean, this seems intentionally hurt. I mean,
it's like you and me owning Calumet and Thursday night, we're sitting up at midnight going, should we just close it tomorrow and just not tell anybody? Yeah, let's just do it.
Yeah. You know, when our division got closed at uni, at Universal Studios, we had like 4 months notice.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a transition period and there were severance packages and there was insurance and there was all this stuff. I mean, they handled it really well, as well as they could given the final outcome.
Right. Yeah.
This is sort of the polar opposite of the way that was handled.
Are you surprised, though?
Yes.
You are. Okay.
That there was no notice?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's good. I'm just not surprised. I don't know. I get frustrated by that kind of stuff a lot.
You know, it's just, how long have you been working here, not counting tomorrow?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really strange.
And you know what? I got to tell you, though, surprising. I mean, so... In New York, we have B&H and we have Adorama and we have Photo Care. Where do people go in LA? Sammy's?
I talked to Kevin and you mean now?
Yeah.
Now, yeah, probably Sammy's.
Right.
There's one in, I think there are only two locations. There's one in Pasadena and one in LA. Like one, I think it's on Fairfax. Yeah, by the farmer's market.
It's crazy though.
Patrick, on the other hand, he's a big fan of, what's a place called? Film Tools.
Okay.
But they cater more towards the film and television end of the spectrum than the stills end. I mean, obviously there's going to be some overlap, but
yeah.
I mean, it's a big thing.
You know, hey, speaking of the film sales place, can I give a plug for my Apple Box guy?
Oh yeah, you just bought some Apple Boxes.
Yeah, I was gonna go to the store and buy some Apple Boxes because I never had any, but every once in a while, it's nice to be able to stand somebody up a couple inches against somebody else, or you know, have somebody sit on an Apple Box is just a thing, or get up myself. So I was looking at buying a couple, and they're like $40 or so if you like go to the store and get them.
And so, they're just plywood, right?
Yeah, they're just like plywood boxes, right? So I found, I was just looking up Apple Boxes in New York City, figuring there's got to be like some place where you can get them cheap, right?
Right.
And I found a website, nycappleboxes.com, and it's some guy in 2011, this guy's neighbor, who's a photographer, came, because this guy's a carpenter.
Uh-huh.
Neighbor came over and asked if he could make some Apple Boxes, and he looked at some plans, you know, online or whatever it is. He's like, yeah, I could do this. And so he made his first batch from recycled and discarded wood, and he's like, oh, this could actually be really useful. And now he does this as a business, and I ordered a full-size box and a half-size box. $27 for the full-size, $25 for the half-size. For $10, he delivers them to you in New York City.
Right.
So for $57... It like he brought me Apple Boxes. So it was cheaper than me buying them at the store, and he brought them to me.
He's like the Abe Froman of Apple Boxes.
Yeah. That was good. I like that. Anyway, super nice guy named Freddie, and his website, nycappleboxes.com. And I have them here and they look great. And
that's cool.
Anyway, I like the idea of supporting, you know, some guy who's just
in.
Little independent. Little independent guys like that, you know, it's good. His website, he admits, needs some work, but
Squarespace.
Yeah, I know. Really, he really should. In fact, I told him that when we were doing it. Anyway,
NYC, if only Apple Squarespace Boxes. Allowed you to sell stuff. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, anyhow, check it out. Yeah, Calumet. It's just it is sad though that one more thing is gone because I used to buy stuff at Calumet.
Yeah, it's just, like I said, it's just no bueno the way it was handled. And,
Well, since you're in such a good mood, let's talk about our photographer of the week.
Ugh. Okay, fair warning. This was not my idea. Disclaimer.
Was that like Jack Reacher? Remember, you wanted this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes.
So
I apologize, listeners.
Today's photographer of the week is Terry Richardson.
Ugh.
What do you have to say about Terry Richardson?
Not much. You know what? I do. Actually, I do.
Should we talk about Terry Richardson, who he is, before we go in on this?
Okay, sure. Okay. Sure.
Terry Richardson, I guess you would call him a fashion photographer.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
Some people do.
Okay. Last 20 years or so, tends to shoot with on-camera flash or just off-camera flash, sort of like hard... a lot against white walls, that kind of look, very flat pictures.
Really imaginative.
True. He kind of does the same thing all over the time, but he gets hired a lot and does a lot of work.
But okay.
I'm saying that that's a fact.
Go ahead. Okay.
Then we can discuss why and how.
Right.
So look at his work for his work's sake. I am not generally a fan of his work. Jeffrey's not a fan of his work, as we haven't been a fan of some other photographers of the week that we've seen, but they are important photographers in the sense that they are discussed and seen and talked about. Okay, so that's that. Now, as of late, and this has always been rumors, but it's getting worse and worse over time, Terry Richardson brings in young models, and he... The word is that he has them do sexual favors for him and the like at his studio, and they feel somewhat obligated to do it because...
While his assistant photographs it.
Yeah, his female assistant photographs it. Now, some people... you know, the girls have a hard time saying no because their agent says, oh my God, you're getting your picture taken by Terry Richardson tomorrow. If you do this right, this would be big for you, essentially. So there's this sort of complicit thing in with the entire industry with him. Is that fair to say in your estimation?
For whatever reason, yes. Okay. I have no idea why he keeps getting hired.
Okay.
I can't, it boggles my mind why he gets hired.
Okay. I don't disagree with you. So, but you, this really bothers you.
It bothers me tremendously.
Okay. What do you think should happen to him?
I can't answer what should happen to him, but what, okay. The arguments around this latest news cycle were his behavior. He then moved it to his work, saying that he was creating art, and he's comparing himself to Mapplethorpe and Helmut Newton, which is laughable. First of all, Helmut Newton's work empowered women. He presented women as strong figures, empowering them in his photographs.
Right.
He didn't ejaculate on them and have his assistant photograph it.
Okay.
I find nothing redeeming about Richardson's photographs.
Is he doing anything illegal?
We don't know.
Right.
We don't know.
Look, I certainly think he's a slime ball personally. I certainly don't care about his work.
It's unimaginative. Yeah. It's derivative. And the biggest problem I have with his work is about him, not the work.
Yep.
He is the center of his world, not the work.
So who's at fault that he is popular? Is society at fault for liking his pictures?
We live in a celebrity obsessed, culture conscious madhouse where this type of work and this type of behavior is celebrated. I mean, how bad can he be? He's photographed Oscar winner Jared Leto.
Right, well, right. They're friends. You know, they go out drinking together at the clubs.
Right.
Yep.
So we've rewarded not only mediocre work, in my opinion, but potentially aberrant and maybe even illegal behavior.
Yeah. Now, my argument that I was talking to you about before we started the show was that people hire him because he sells magazines. Right?
Right.
So is there some argument that says that it's perfectly right for them to keep hiring them because they're trying to sell magazines? And if his pictures sell magazines, then he's going to keep getting hired.
Sure.
Right.
I think that's a valid statement of fact.
The question is, I guess, why his pictures sell magazines? Because they're generally not very good.
I don't see any craft. I don't see any attention to aesthetics or even an ethos that I can discern.
Right.
I don't understand. I really don't.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. You know, the problem is that, like, short of him actually raping some girl, if he says, hey, let's have some fun, and she thinks she's going to do it because then she gets in his good graces and that helps her career, it's a very difficult line to toe because it's like, well, if you didn't make her do it, then how do you say that it's wrong? You know what I mean? Like, it's coercion, yes, but yeah, you know what I mean?
Like, yes.
It's difficult to prove coercion, you know?
Yeah, it is. And is there just a fear on the part of some of these ladies that are claiming what amounts to, you know, abuse? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I'm sure some of the, I'm not saying that, I'm sure they were coerced. I'm sure that they were talked into things. And I think that it's disgusting that he would do that. You know, I don't play that game. And you know what, too? It gives photographers a bad name.
It does. It does. I mean, how many years have
photographers been trying to get out of the, oh, you're just some slime ball that wants to get my clothes off?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't understand it. I don't understand the appeal. I don't understand the continued employment.
He's got a book out of all this like behind the scenes pictures, including one of him like having sex with this girl.
Yeah, well,
this is what goes on at his studio. You know,
I don't get it. I just don't get it. You know, maybe he's a super guy. I don't know. Maybe he's fun at parties. I don't know.
Yeah,
I just think that his on camera and potentially off camera, but especially on camera behavior is hurting photography.
I agree that. Yes. Yeah. He's slimy and gross. I don't know. I just, it's, you know, what about that Tyler Shields guy who's out in LA? You know him?
I've seen a few of his photos.
Some of his pictures seem very kind of Richardson-esque to me.
Yeah. In the sense that it's that same kind against of very the wall. Harsh against
yeah.
the wall.
Yeah. And it's girls doing things that I would imagine it gets very difficult to get a girl to do that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like here, lick this, eat this banana suggestively, you know?
Right. Right.
That
right,
kind
right.
of stuff.
But from what I can gather, maybe, I don't know if it was his work. I remember seeing something and I don't remember what it was, but it was like a photo essay where there was some craft to it. The white wall harsh lighting is one aspect to his work.
Okay.
Whereas from what I have seen of Terry Richardson, it is the embodiment of his work. It is all inclusive. This is what you get. If you've seen one Terry Richardson photo, you've seen arguably all of Terry Richardson's, photos.
Yeah. I mean, he does stuff on the street too, but I don't think it's all that interesting. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of stuff. I don't know. I just look, we're not going to always agree with all these different photographers, but you know, if getting back to the beginning to wrap it all around, you know, success, you know, he is a successful photographer.
Absolutely.
You know, so what does that say about success?
I don't know.
You
know,
I feel like that's the bigger statement, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The fact that he is somebody that some people look up to or want to hire says more about society than it does a lot of things, you know?
Right. Right.
I don't know.
It's very strange. And again, I'm just not a, I'm not a fan of the work, and you know, at the very least, I'm not a fan of the work. And at the very most, if he was
making that kind of work, but it was a super sweet guy, would you still have a problem with him?
Not as much. I wouldn't think the work was any better or any more imaginative or any more driven by craft.
Okay.
But the image that is surrounding him and it's coming out by more and more people, it can't just be sort of, I guess, I suppose it could, but the odds are it's not just, you know, some aspiring model trying to get some press by saying.
No, there's too many examples now, right? Yeah.
It seems to be.
Yeah.
It seems to be. And yeah. I don't know, but you know, if these things are true, then that's just kind of smarmy, yep. You know, and it kind of ruins it for the photographer who is trying to do something with integrity or with creativity or you know, with purpose that happens to involve a nude person, man or woman.
Sure.
You know, it leaves a mark. It leaves a visible scar for those who come after him.
Yeah. Yep. Makes it harder for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say?
No.
All right. You done with Terry Richardson for now?
It wasn't my idea, man.
I just thought that it, you know, we haven't done him yet and, you know, let's wrap it around, you know?
Yeah.
Wrap it up with a bow and be done with it.
And be done with it. And never speak of it again.
All right. If people want to get a hold of us, how do they get a hold of us?
Podcast@ontakingpictures.com.
Okay.
Or you can use the spiffy contact us little form there that
on 5x5.
Mr. Benjamin has been kind enough to assemble.
Yeah, that gets to us now.
You think he writes a lot of code still?
He writes all the code. He writes the site.
But I mean, so he's still like writing new things. Not
yeah, just, when he adds new features, that's him writing them.
He's got to be a monster coder.
Ruby on Rails guy.
Wow. Respect, yeah, Mr. Benjamin.
There you go. See? Dan's got skills.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, wow. And you know what? And his tools are exactly what they should be for what he needs. You know what I mean? Like he writes his own CMS because he needs a very specific, particular thing.
Yeah, you and I have talked about it offline where it makes sense. The way it's written makes sense to the users that it's written for.
Yeah, yeah. It's very particular. It's designed exactly for what he needs, and that's it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Let's see. You could get to Jeffrey at fadedandblurred.com, of course, or at Jeffrey Sidoris, JeffreySadoris. Yes. On Twitter, I'm at Bill Wadman on Twitter, and BillWadman.com/blog for my latest stuff. And that's about it, right?
Yes. And are you going to print any of those light experiments? Are they worth printing to you?
I was actually thinking about doing a little print sale of them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them on metallic paper.
Ooh, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Let's do big ones.
See if maybe, does Elko do metallic?
Yes, they do.
Nice.
Hey, go over to iTunes and rate the show. Just, that always helps.
It helps people find us.
Yep.
And it looks fun too. Yeah.
And that's it. And Jeffrey, okay. go to your appointment and we will see y'all next week.
Next week for
the 100th episode.
Should we
do a Q&A for the 100th episode?
We just did a Q&A like two shows ago. Actually, we'll find something.
It was like six shows ago.
Was it really?
I think so.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. If you have questions, send them in. I don't want to do like all of them Q&A.
Okay.
Yeah. We have to talk about legacy and what on taking pictures really means.
All right. Get out of here.
We have to look back to look forward.
You're right. It was 94 that we did. So
you got to go forward to go back. Wasn't
it? 94. It was seven ago. It's 2 months and a half ago.
All right. Okay. All right.
Yeesh. All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Right. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say.